All right, guys, we are live with the Contractor Compass podcast. This is episode number 13, I believe. Just me and Tom today. As you guys know, we all run businesses in the day-to-day as well. And I know that Jason had a storm come through. He's dealing with some dispatching issues with some of his companies that he's consulting for. So he will be out. But we got me and Tom kind of have an open topic today. We're going to talk about succession planning and exiting your home service company, HVAC, insulation, whatever company you own, really just different tactics and things that we've seen. And this isn't, and just being forward here, guys, on this podcast, and I'm sure Tom has maybe another angle and different things that he's seen over his many years in experience in the field over mine. In terms of, you know, guys that are planning to actually exit, that's something that I personally haven't done. I don't know if Tom has. Tom, I'll let you kind of speak on that yourself. But I know that I've talked to a ton of business owners that have walked me through how they're going to do it and how they're setting it up. And I know that the different strategies that they're using. So I'm speaking a little bit openly here, but hopefully help some people get in the right direction. Make sure I can speak to things just in terms of selling a business in general that they should have in line. And I'm sure Tom can as well. So Tom, any first thoughts when you think of, you know, obviously maybe specifically to HVAC or any company in general, let's just say home service though, let's keep it localized to home service. When you're building to sell or building to hand off to your kids or grandkids or whatever it might be, are there anything that you've seen in the, you know, many years of, you know, your work in these industries that are kind of common staples that people try to accomplish before they can hand off or sell that business?
Well, there has been a shift over the last, I'm going to say, what I've seen the last 3 or 4 years and progressively getting stronger, that usually if you had an HVAC company that you would sell it to somebody that you knew, or, you know, somebody you met at the parts store, or that, hey, I'm looking to retire, or you get a business broker out there, or things like that. Some of the things that's really coming on strong, there's some pretty large PE firms out there that are gobbling up businesses. And, you know, there's several of them that I know personally, and they're looking for, you know, the companies that's been around for a while, that's got, you know, a nice reputation, that's got some nice cash flow, but they also know when they come in and they buy it for X, that when they start installing their, you know, a real CFO and a real marketing company or partner with a marketing company like yours, or really getting the ship tight, that they know that they can 3, 4, 5, 10x that top line revenue. Yep. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've kidded on past podcasts about the word EBITDA, and which stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, is that's a big number that some of these PE firms are out there paying 10, 15 times EBITDA. So,
correct.
You know, one of the things that this is my suggestion, because I work with a lot of, with my other company that I own, Capital Concierge, I do a lot of capital raises for partner buyouts and new franchises and things like that, is that, you know, it's fine to be a small company, you know, but a small company, you know, Air Around the Clock started 35 years ago with 3 trucks. Now they got 140. But they've scaled their business. But I've seen so many times of dealers that I've worked with that run their accounting department out of a shoebox.
Absolutely. Can't have that.
And so, you know, we talked about KPIs on our last call and things like that. And if a contractor has visions of wanting to sell their business, getting a really tight accounting setup, that really can really watch effectively on the cost, better market, better, you know, and really have a tight run ship, and then also continually to work on that EBITDA and driving that profitability, that's going to make a huge difference in what you get for your company. Well,
absolutely. Yeah, being able to actually show numbers that are profitable and make sense in a clear manner. So, and I know this is something that we've touched on very briefly, and you know, I think it was extremely briefly, but that's actually something that I know I personally look at doing here in the next couple of years, just because I've gotten good at the one aspect of the business in terms of scaling, where, you know, I do plan on acquiring and the next, and so I'm learning what it takes to, from a buyer aspect of what to look for. And, you know, to your point, bookkeeping is a massive one. So I'll give you a live example. And I'm going to touch on a lot of different points here that we can probably go into depth, but that's, you bring up a lot of good points there, Tom. Like there's a number that these PE firms are going to want to see right now. I don't know how low these PE firms will go, but speaking in what I've seen in the market, usually a PE firm, I haven't seen them look at anybody under 5 million, right? It's usually 10 in the cases that I've seen. So just keep that in mind. You're thinking, oh, I can sell to a PE firm and you're doing $500,000 a year. No, you can't. Okay. But you can maybe sell to someone. I know for a fact, we were just bringing on a company for the marketing aspect on our side. And it was a great guy, super excited to work with him. He called me 2 days before we were onboarding him, and he had an offer on his company, and he did 1.5 million the year before. And he was selling it, you know, I think it was for 400 something thousand dollars. Okay. So you can get an idea. You can still sell your business, right? Smaller, under the, you know, that 5-10 million, but you're not nearly going to get that volume or that payday that you may think you're going to, and you have to have certain things in line. So that live example, once again, guys, I haven't sold any home service companies, but we're speaking about this just because me and Tom work in this industry and we see it happen all the time. We know what these owners are getting ready to do. We also know people in the private equity space and what they look for. When I first, you know, had an interest in, hey, I'd like to acquire in the future, I called someone at a private equity firm that I knew, and I had them walk me through what they looked for when they were acquiring companies. Now this live example I was talking about, I just spoke to a gentleman yesterday, and I'll leave company names and names out of it. But I spoke to this gentleman yesterday. He was 70 years old. He wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do with his business. He said he had a daughter that wanted it, a son that wanted it, and a grandkid that thought he might want it in the future. But the owner didn't think that any of the family actually had the capability to run the business, right? Which is actually kind of uncommon, because usually when you hear of kids wanting to take it over, the owners, in my experience, have been like, absolutely, my kids want to have it. I want to build it for the kids. But this owner, he's like, he's pretty close to getting out of it. I mean, he was 7 years old, right? And he's ran the whole thing for the last 40 years. So I had a talk with him. We got past what he needed for marketing, because that's initially what he was calling us for. He wanted to do a little bit more in revenue so he could sell the company for more. I'm like, let's get out of the marketing thing. Tell me, like, you're looking to sell. I'm like, give me an idea kind of what you have going on in terms of, you know, systems and processes on the back end, what you're doing in terms of revenue, right? Are all your books in place? Have you paid your taxes? Is everything in line there? You don't have any marks against you? Because he had a couple things that are very attractive. One, he has a brand that's been in business for 40 something years. That's huge. He hasn't poured any gasoline on the fire ever. Right. So if you put a guy like me in that business where I'm going to be able to implement marketing and sales side, and if at the very least, just the marketing side, right, I can light that business on fire in a good way. Right.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you have the capital, he's got the brand, he's got the customer loyalty. But I had to start asking him a few questions. I'm like, OK, well, what are you doing in revenue? He goes, well, I'm doing about $500,000 a year. I used to do about 2 million, 1.5. I'm like, let's just say his name is John. I'm like, John, I'm like, $500,000 a year. I'm like, you might, if you're going to sell the company, and I don't even know any other information. I'm like, you're selling the company. Like you'd be lucky to get a yearly salary out of the sale of that business. I'm like, so we've got to look at, I'm like, first things first, how many maintenance agreements do you have? How many people do you have on maintenance agreement? I'm like, cause that's a lot of things that, and feel free to cut me off at any time, Tom. But if you hear something that does not, as this is new to me as well, but this is just what I've kind of learned. So first thing I asked him is, you know, how many maintenance agreements do you have for customers? Because as you know, I mean, that's going to be a massive, revenue driving stream in terms of customers that you have enrolled that are paying monthly. That's seen as your book of business. And unfortunately for this gentleman, things just kind of kept going in the wrong direction. He goes, well, I don't have anybody on maintenance programs. I'm like, he goes, I don't even have one. He goes, God, I wish I would have done that back in the day. He goes, I'm not really the biggest business guy. He goes, I just started. I do a good job. My customers like me. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, let's just hold up there. So you don't have anybody on maintenance programs. I'm like, now here's the important question. If you don't have to be, maintenance programs can be implemented. right? They can be, you can implement those over the course of 2 years with different tactics. But the main question is, what does your book of business look like? Do you have contacts, emails, phone numbers for everybody that you've serviced? How large is that book of business? And he goes, yes, I do. I have 15,000 customers. I'm like, that is wonderful. I'm like, you can implement. I'm like, you can run I would run 4 times a year. I would run an SMS and an email reactivation to those 15,000 people, asking them or giving them the option to join your maintenance program. I'm like, over the next 2 years, if you can enroll 3,000 out of 15,000 people into a maintenance program, you might actually have a shot at selling a company that has some numbers that somebody can get behind. Maybe not a PE firm, but someone, right? And then the other thing I asked in terms of, like, what do you have for systems and processes? Like, when you leave, does the business still run? Well, naturally, the answer was no, right? My daughter answers the phones. I still kind of handle the sales. I'm like, okay, well, as a buyer coming in, I need you to be able to leave, or whoever, right? Once again, that's the part I'm educated on, is in terms of, like, trying to buy, right? I need you to be able to get the heck out of there and retire like you want to, and the company still runs and not everybody leaves and I've got nothing here, right? So those are some big things to keep in mind. So just to kind of recap, if you have a number goal that you're trying to get to, and EBITDA is going to be massive, like Tom mentioned, that's going to be huge, right? Make sure you have people on maintenance agreements. I don't have a number for you, any listeners right now. Like, I don't have a direct number on what that'll transfer towards in terms of if you have X amount of people on maintenance agreement, but I know that is going to be something massive that they're going to look at. Make sure your taxes are in line. You're all paid. You're like, you don't need red marks against you in that aspect. Cause if you do, you're out. Nobody's going to take a second look at you. You're scratched off the list.
Pay your bills on time.
Exactly. Pay your bills on time. And then systems and processes, guys, you have to be able to leave that business and it's still run. If you can't, you do not have a business, right? That's just the facts. If you can't, you don't have it. You can't sell it.
If you don't have a business, you have a job.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I was going to say. You took the words out of my mouth. But Tom, I mean, I literally had that conversation yesterday, so it kind of fit perfectly into this podcast, but I'll let you kind of jump in. Anything additional, anything that I touched on or that I was missing or that you've seen?
I know of one PE firm out there that's actually, I know a few. I work with a few of them. One of them will actually come in and buy, instead of buying the whole company, they'll buy 40%. And they came in and bought a business out in Arizona that was doing maybe under 3 million.
Okay.
And they have taken that thing to like over 15 million in like a year and a half.
Yep.
Because again, they put in a real CFO. They've got marketing. They're taking
a proven formula and implementing it into that business.
Right. But at the same time, the guy that they sold out, you know, or the guy that gave up 40% of his company in this process, he's, you know, do you want 100% of 3 million or do you want 40% of 15 million?
Correct.
It doesn't take a calculator to do the math on that.
That's exactly right.
At some point, you know, then they take him out at some huge price. So you're talking about service contracts, and, you know, we've talked about it on before that I'm the director of finance for Air Around the Clock, a 35-year-old company. Service contracts, they wrap a labor warranty and a service contract together where they come out of the house twice a year. They're seeing those units twice a year. They're touching the customer, which also allows them to see the hot water heater and other plumbing things that the company does and what have you. So it's those impressions, those times that you get face to face with a customer where you can upsell them. And you're like you said, you now have something of value that's being firm. You've got that many customers that you're touching on it on twice a year. That's value. So the, you know, poor guy that you spoke of when he was over 2 million, now he's 500,000, he's getting tired.
Yeah.
And now he's like, oh, well, shoot, I want to sell a company. I got to get to that 2 million. That's why he's talking to you, which was a good move on his part, by the way. Being able to, it's all about the customers, your reputation, and they're looking into you is that they come want to buy your business. They may want you to hang around for a year to kind of make that transition or whatever.
Yep. But
they're buying your reputation. And so your reputation is with the contract, with the customers, also the distributors, equipment manufacturers, things like that. They're buying that relationship from you because they believe that they can run that better than they can, or they can put money behind it, put some new gunpowder, you know, in the deal and crank it up. But
that's exactly right.
You know, but you're completely right. Accounting must have your KPIs squared away. You ought to learn what EBITDA means if you don't know.
Yeah.
Because these are the things that these PE firms are going to look at. And anybody that wants to buy your business, maybe it's not a PE firm, but to your point, another HVAC company, maybe they're a smaller company. They want to grow their business and they're going to get a new, they're going to buy your, you know, that you're 45 minutes away. Now they've got two locations so they can expand. So it's
I see that often. I've seen that a couple times, actually. That's a great point too. It may be an existing HVAC company that's looking to buy in your area. I actually just talked to a guy a couple months back. His mom had a company. Honestly, it might have been in Arizona. His mother, and she started it and scaled it. And she was probably doing $5 million a year, or $7 million a year, maybe. But she was looking to sell, so she brought her son in, who is a financial advisor and did a couple other things. He's raised a lot of money for a lot of people. And he's either like, well, we're either going to buy our way into a big payday, right? We're going to purchase these local companies, or we're going to scale individually. He goes, we're just not sure how we're going to do it yet. So that could very well be a factor, is that you might sell to your neighbor type of deal. Right. Which isn't a bad thing if it works for you. But the biggest thing to think about in any company, but obviously we're speaking home service at the moment, but in any business, if you're going to sell, right, you have to start looking for the things that company or that person or that PE firm is going to look at when they come in. Because if you don't have stuff in line, your evaluation is going to drop tremendously, right? And you can also do things that'll add value or that can double, triple your evaluation. And just some things that I know in the tech space, right? Let's say if you have some app that you have designed for your customers, might cost $20,000 to make. I don't know, right? I'm just giving you an example, right? Let's say you're a business, you're doing $5 million a year, and you create like a Comfort Plus app for your customers. I've seen this done. Where now they have an app for you on their phone, right? That alone can raise evaluations so much. It's in little assets like that. But at a very base level, if you're not looking at adding anything fancy, right, you need to be able to, you need to know what these things are that these guys are looking for. And they're looking for something of value. They're looking for your brand. They're looking for good numbers. They're looking for accurate reporting. They're looking for systems and process. They're looking for profitability, right? They're going to come in. Their idea is to come in, buy you out, right? Buy this company in a good way, right? And be able to implement their system where your team is going to stay. They're simply going to add, like you said, Tom, they're going to add, you know, gunpowder to the mix, right? They're going to light that thing on fire. That's their goal. So when they step in, and this is coming from discussions with guys that I know that are in PE firms, hey, we have a proven process. We look for companies that fit that proven process where we can easily slip our process in. We bring in a CFO, we bring in a COO, right? We, like you mentioned, Tom, we can put our players on the field, and they're more than likely going to be remote. That's what I've seen, is that those big leaders, they're sometimes they're not on the ground with you. They'll be a remote within the business, but they're going to implement those people, and they want the most seamless process to be able to implement that. So if your business comes along with a bunch of hitches, you're out of the game. There's not a, you know, you don't stand a very good chance of getting bought up by, you know, somebody who actually has their stuff together. And brand is a big one. So if you're listening and you're thinking of selling, make sure you do it, unless you're selling to, and Tom, maybe you can speak on this, cause I actually don't know, if that'd be a big difference. For example, let's say they started a company, scaled it to 3 million in 2 years, right? They're doing 3 million a year, let's just say 5 million in 2 years, right? There was an existing guy who started the businesses before. It wasn't his first rodeo. 5 million in 2 years. Now he's looking at selling versus a company that's been around for 25 years that does you know, $2.5 million. Have you seen any big differences or heard any big differences there, Tom, which what somebody might look at each of those businesses? Will that one that's been around 25 years get a stronger evaluation simply for brand? Or how does that work?
I don't necessarily have any color that I could share on that, but other than just thoughts, in other words, when you've got a business that's been in business for 25 years, obviously, heaven forbid, hopefully they have a CRM that they keep customer's name, address, telephone number, email address,
correct,
cell phone numbers, things like that. Lord, I hope they do. But in other words, it's from a marketing standpoint. But
yeah,
you know, people, as opposed to someone that's only a couple years old at the same volume amount, maybe have potentially have gathered less customers than a guy that's been on that long.
Correct.
At the same time, you could have a guy that's 2 years in business at $2.5 million. That is super sharp as far as technology wise, and he's got his stuff really tight. As opposed to somebody who's 25 years old, that you know, it 2 years ago, Air Around the Clock implemented tablets in House Call Pro and things like that. So you know, and you know, the older technician, what happened to, what's wrong with a damn piece of paper and an ink pen? I've been doing it this way for 15 years.
Yeah,
so, you know, you talk about that.
Correct.
It's all about what you have to sell, right?
Correct.
To your point, that PE firm or anybody else is, you know, if I buy it for X, can I make Y?
Yep, 100%. It's got to make sense. And I think we covered that well in terms of like what the knowledge that's actually applicable. You know, just from what I've seen and you know our relationships with some of these firms and what guys are looking for. Now, flipping the script to kind of wrap into the second half of the topic, building for succession in terms of letting, you know, the younger generation take over. And I'm sure we'll do another podcast, and I know we will for a fact. We'll do another podcast. We'll get some guests on that have sold or have had their children step in multi-generational companies. We've actually got a few companies we work with that could probably do that for us. But anyway, building for succession, do you see with any business, do you see certain steps that people take? Or if somebody's like, hey, I really want my kids to be able to take it over. They want to, I just want to make sure I give them all the right tools. Let's take that gentleman, for example. Let's say all his stuff were together and he was doing a good volume of business. He wants his son to take it over. Let's say, how would you go about setting things up to make sure that individual can, you know, that his son at some point in time, your kid, your sibling, whoever it might be, can take it over and run the business either, you know, hopefully as you did to, you know, maintain profitability and continue to grow and scale. Any opinions?
I can just tell you that my father raised me much differently than I raised my kids. And so my first thought is that, you know, if he's coming into business, if he's grown up in the business, and he probably has done everything from take the trash out to, to, you know, to tear down old units for the copper or whatever the case may be is. But, you know, the thought is that know the thing from ground up, know everybody's job.
Yeah.
Instead of just coming in as a prima donna and going, well, yeah,
absolutely
business. And then he gets in the position and doesn't know, you know, he hasn't done the things that the father did that took to build the business.
Correct.
So turn it from the ground up and know it an inside out and be able to do everybody's single job that you do. So it's going to make you a much better manager and being able to lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way.
Yep. I agree 100%. That's my only add on that I had to that side of things in terms of succession as well. You hit it right on the head. It just making sure that whoever's taking it over went through it. Cause it's, the process of building a business, right? It's not necessarily like you become a different person, right? When you've gone through all of these things and you've done all of these roles and so it's frankly impossible to step in with zero experience and think you're going to run the company like it has been ran. You have no idea. You might learn the responsibilities that your dad, let's say I'm the kid, right? That your dad has now as the owner, right? And has this huge team under him. But he did everything leading up to that stage. So yeah, I think if you're going to build for success, you need to make sure you get your family or whoever in the business early. Don't just like your, you know, don't just your kid jumps out of college and you think he's going to, you know, jump in and now take on the family business and take over in the next 2 years. Even if he did just jump out of college, you need to start him at the bottom, work him all the way through. So they have a good understanding of, and I think the way that you said it, jumping is like a prima donna. I think that happens more often than not in some of those cases.
The father worked his ass off,
correct,
to build it from point A to point B.
Yep.
And like, you know, my son got out of college and says, okay, well, I'm ready to come work for you. I was like, no, you got to go out and work for somebody else, and you got to get your knuckles all bloody. And you, yes, you've got to do some of that before you come in, because at this point, first off, I'm going to be harder on you than anybody else that works for me because you're my son.
Correct.
Which may not be fair to you, but
yeah,
the bottom line is you need to go out and find some experience on your own that you can bring back to the company versus, you know.
Agreed 100%. That's another good point as well. To not just let that in, you know, whoever this may be, your son, your kid, your grandkids, whatever, jump right into the business. If they're done with schooling or whatever, the whatever they're going through, just out of high school or whatever it might be. I love that idea. Go work for another company in the field. Because no matter what, no matter how much you think it's not like, well, I'm not going to treat you differently, or maybe I will, but it'll be, you know, I'm going to be harder on you. Either way, there is a difference, and there will be. And the person that's coming in, especially if they're younger, right, they're going to think that, well, you know, at the end of the day, if I'm getting my ass chewed, I'm getting my ass chewed, but it's just by dad, right? I mean, I've dealt with that my whole life. It's different if it's an actual boss and he's going to fire your ass, right? So that's a great add-on as well. That's a great point, Tom. Cool. Other than that, guys, not a super long one today, but we wanted to talk about the big things that we've seen. I saw the topic here and I sent it to the guys beforehand. Just cause I know a lot of, like Tom said, this has become a very big thing recently to sell, PE, especially if you have a, you know, large business. If you're doing over $10 million a year right now and you're listening to this, you know for a fact that you've had multiple buyers reach out to you. I haven't met one company that hasn't. So you may be steadfast and still own it and you're good to go. But even if you're a smaller business listening to this, biggest things to focus on is just take notes on the little things that we mentioned, the little things that matter. But if you're looking at it from a 10,000 foot view, think to yourself, what am I really selling? What am I selling to this next person, right? And how can I make it as seamless as possible for them to implement their systems and have everything run smoothly with my existing team and my processes? Anything else that you would add, Tom?
Just run a tight ship and have something build value the best you can.
Yep.
And have your processes in place.
Yep.
When they come in to do the due diligence, Is it a bunch of people running around like a chicken with their head cut off? Or is there, said Susie does this, Bobby does that, Judy does this, and Jimmy does that, and things are moving through. So
correct.
Get your ship tight. Get your ship together.
Yeah, nobody wants to buy a headache. Tom, give us – we can't go the whole show without the the sign. So give me a sign to sign off here. For you guys that are just listening, Tom's going to hold up his people buy payment sign, right? So if you're a contractor, HVAC, insulation, whatever it might be, you need some financing options, reach out to Mr. Tom here because he holds up the sign every time. Otherwise, guys,
marketing, obviously, Colton is the man on the market.
I am your guy. So you
this sent you a lead today from one of our contractors.
Colton. Yep, absolutely. Awesome, guys. Well, we'll see you in the next one, episode 13. If you're looking to sell, listen to it. We'll get some other owners on here that either have sold or have geared to sell or for succession. And we'll do another episode down the road. Thanks, guys. See you in the next one.
Thanks, guys.